Happy Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Welcome to the podcast. If you haven't joined us ever before, what the hell have you been thinking? But at least you're here now. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com, and the podcast stars the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the only Hall of Fame voter in town, the only AP voter, the guy who votes for
power rankings and the MVP and the All-Pro team. And the All-Pro team.
That's right. The man himself, Mr. Ira Kaufman. Ira, your podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, 70-plus years of Ed Morse across Florida. Fantastic family-owned dealership. Service like just old school. Old school and also very modern at all the dealerships. But Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, those are the only Cadillac dealers in Hillsborough County, sponsoring all of your work on JoeBucksFan.com.
And Lee DeKemper and I just made a personal appearance, Stephen. At Alfa Romeo.
And you did a little bonus work at Ed Morse Alfa Romeo.
We were sitting at a table. We had an astrologer near us. We had a magician. He came by with the cards. I drew the ace of spades, of course. Yeah, a guy making balloons. It was quite a time over there.
You were out there for a special Alfa Romeo Italian feast. So I'm glad you had some fun out there. But all the offers, Ira, EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. The new October offers are coming down the line. Next couple of days, matter of hours. Might even be on the website right now, but most likely they're usually there by October 4th or so. So we encourage everybody to go to Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. You can chat live with a representative there if you need to.
If Javier's listening to this podcast, and I believe he's in town this week, and he's staying for the New England game Thursday night, I challenge Javier to get his butt down there, and they'll make him a special international deal. How do you like that? He can pay any way he wants, any currency.
I've heard that they might have special rates for people in Panama. Now, I can't confirm that, but I do know that if you live in Plant City, or you live in Brandon, or in Tampa, that's where you got to go. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. You and Lee, we'll talk a little bit more, I'm sure, about your Italian feast later in this podcast. But Ira, I'm going to throw this to you. Did I mention my name? I'm Steve Isbitz, JoeBucksFan.com.
Your name goes without saying.
There you go. Okay. Lee DeKemper, JoeBucksFan.com is with us. We're a little bit microphone challenged because I forgot a microphone, so we'll have a little different kind of banter today, but it will be electric, Ira.
Understood.
Now, I'm throwing it right back to you, Ira. Buccaneers, thrilling, sort of wild win. Let's call it what it was, a wild win. We haven't seen one like this in a long time. They're 2-1 right now. We read your 10 takeaways from the game, which are at JoeBucksFan.com, but what the hell happened out there? What did you see? What's meaningful? Let it rip.
Big picture. Lee, big picture. To me, my takeaway is you hit the quarter pole at worst. You're 2-2. That's my takeaway. And why is that important? Well, normally, you know, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, that's no big deal. You know, if you're the Denver Broncos, that's no big deal. Well, guess what? This is the Tampa Bay Bucs, Lee. And at the quarter pole, they're generally buried. Buried. They're 1-3, or they're 0-4. Thank you, Lovie Smith. That's the way it's been around here, even last year, after the Atlanta win. They lose 3 in a row. They're 1-3. They're 3-5. So even with that 5-game winning streak, which was stunning last year, and it wasn't a facade because they beat some good teams like Kansas City and Seattle, it wasn't enough, Lee, because you're buried in a hole. And, you know, you got to go crazy in the last 12 games of the year. Now they got a chance to go 3-1. New England is not the New England we saw against the Atlanta Falcons. As a matter of fact, maybe they are because their defense wasn't very good in that game for most of it. And their defense through 4 weeks stinks. It absolutely stinks. Going into this Sunday, they were first in the league in total offense and last in total defense. You know who we associate that with, Mr. DeKemper? The New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
The 7-9 Saints. Now, New England has lost 2 games at Gillette Stadium, gentlemen, where they never lose. They lost to a Carolina team and gave up a lot of points, Lee, to a team that doesn't have their best target, Greg Olsen. Not there. So there's problems there. So, Steve, my main takeaway is it gives them a nice cushion, Lee, going into a game against the world champions who look anything but like the world champions. They're playing at home. They've won 6 in a row in this building. That's nothing to sneeze at. Malcolm Glazer's getting, you know, his name up in the rafters. There's going to be some emotion there. I don't want to go too crazy on that because last year there was emotion, you know, and the Falcons did a job on the Bucs, and Sapp and Brooks couldn't even look at the scoreboard and the replay board. But a win's a win, Lee. A win's a win. And it was a big rebound from last week's debacle. They played terrible in Minnesota. And it was all smiles. And in the words of Dirk Cutter, never a doubt, had it all the way. And a big smile and a laugh. Buck fans got to be happy. Lee, we're not used to fourth quarter comebacks by the home team here. We're not.
Well, the thing that you may have glossed over, which is a positive thing, want to keep a positive spin on this, is the Bucks left 11 points on the field between not getting a touchdown when they had the ball in a half-yard line and that stupid pitch that, I'm sorry, Dirk, I love you, that was a stupid pitch. I'm not one to hound guys about play calls because I don't know what the defense is showing. That's a dumb call. I'm sorry. Okay, so that 4 points they got hosed out of. And, of course, Folk choked all over or yacked all over the place. That was, 7 points there. So 11 points left on the field. Generally in the NFL, if you toss away 11 points, that's a loss. They overcame that with a fourth quarter comeback. I think that is my main takeaway, that normally, I don't care what team it is, even the Patriots, you leave 11 points on the field, you're begging for a loss, yet they rallied for a win. And that, to me, is the biggest takeaway.
All right, Sage, a couple of things I got to throw back at you here. The Buccaneers, not since 2011 have they had any kind of shot of being 2-2 or 3-1 at the quarter pole. So we are going 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16, five straight years, Bucs were 1-3 or worse. So that's why we're all in shock around here. Raheem Morris was 3-1 in 2011, and I believe the same thing in 2010. So different animal, interesting stuff. But let me ask you this, Ira. Big picture, we got it. The offense here. So far, what we're seeing, we saw a totally different Jameis Winston. No turnovers. We saw, again, him spraying the ball around to different receivers. The running game returned. Now, where would you say right now, Ira, where do you believe the offense is? And then you can just roll it right into the defense.
I'll tell you the biggest takeaway from offense, Steve, was big plays. For the first 2 weeks, as I pointed out in the column last week, they didn't have a run of 15 yards, gentlemen. They didn't have a completion of 35 yards. Now, only two games, small sample size. But with a team with DeSean Jackson, Mike Evans, O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate, you expect those explosive plays. It was the big objective on the offensive side of the ball going into 2017. They thought they addressed it in free agency and the draft. Today, we had big plays. We had a big run from Quiz. O.J. Howard emerged. You know, Brate, who is one of the Bucs' best players at this point, I think we got to say. If he drops the ball, you do a double take. You don't expect it.
And he did.
And he did, but he makes tough catches too. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're still looking for DeSean Jackson. So they had big plays today without DeSean Jackson, and he's getting a little frustrated. Mm-hmm. And as Cutter said, he doesn't blame him. So my takeaway is they made the most of their opportunities. They don't have the ball as much as they need to have the ball. Lee, they're not getting enough snaps, mm-hmm. certainly in Minnesota and today. And I'll tell you one of the main culprits. They're not getting off the field on defense. Third down defense, which was so sensational in 2016. Sensational. Number one in the league. Nobody can believe that. And now, you know, they're in the bottom third of the league. You know, maybe 25, 27. Teams keep going 50% on third down, Lee. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year was 34%. It's a big, big difference. The drives are sustaining. The clock's running. And the Bucs aren't getting enough snaps. So Winston played pretty well, Lee. Not great.
But
a lot better than he did in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Quiz Rogers ran the ball well. He had that big run. I told you before the game that Mike Evans was going to show up. He did. Mm-hmm. He scored a touchdown and got him on the half-yard line, which should have been good for another touchdown, mm-hmm. you would think. It wasn't. That's not Mike Evans' fault.
No.
But what's missing is DeSean Jackson down the field. Mm-hmm. Maybe it shows up Thursday night against New England. The stars come out, national audience. But DeSean Jackson is itching to make a big contribution. You can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis missed him on the 2-point conversion. He locked into him.
He was not happy. Didn't
throw a great, was not happy. So, look, they scored 25 points without the help of any takeaways, unlike the Bears game, which kept giving them the ball mm-hmm. on a short field. You know, they got a lot of help in that game, the offense. Today they worked for what they got. And, as we've talked about, Jameis is normally not a fast starter.
No.
Today, he was. They put 13 points up on the board.
You took the words of my mouth. Cutter has always been talking about fast starts. since he got here as an offensive coordinator. Today was a fast start with no help. Like you mentioned, the Bears obviously played Santa Claus. The Bucks took advantage of that. What jumped up with me about Jameis were two plays. No, not the touchdown O.J. Howard or some other passes. He was under duress, I want to say. Yes, it was the third quarter. He threw the ball across the field out of bounds. You could clearly see he wasn't even trying to complete it. He just launched the ball about 20 feet over everybody's head, lived to play another down. That was his biggest problem. He always tried to, and I thought Mike Florio last week described Jameis perfectly. Jameis tries to will the offense down the field, outstretches himself rather than being within himself, and that's when he gets into trouble. But I saw Jameis throw that ball out of bounds where normally he would wing that ball down the middle of the field and pray that someone got it. That was one. Another one, I believe it was the fourth quarter, he took a sack rather than trying to launch the ball. And I thought, okay, here we are. The young stallion is making strides. He's starting to walk on his own here. I believe it or not, two nondescript plays I thought were big plays because it showed Jameis is getting it. He's starting to understand. He's starting to learn. Mature, I guess you could say.
Ira, I got to quibble with what I don't understand what the hell you're talking about with some of this
stuff.
For, you know, it's driving me nuts. Okay. So you're now, you know, we love Jameis here, America's quarterback here at JoeBucksFan.com. You're telling me Winston, you said Winston, not great. What do you want from the guy? I don't understand this, Ira.
To connect with DeSean Jackson?
I don't understand what you want from the guy. He averaged 15 yards of completion, which is pretty much unheard of in the NFL through a whole game.
That's an explosive play. Almost an explosive play.
That's stunning. You know, big play. Even Adam Humphreys, 38 yards in the fourth quarter.
Ira's sitting there. You got him. Yeah, Ira's stewed up here, man.
He's hitting every ball, different targets, spraying the ball around.
Uh-oh.
So I don't understand that part. I mean,
you got Ira going here. He's
I'm
going
to give you the microphone in a second, Ira. You're going to get to go off. You know, Winston, okay? Winston, 22 of 38, 332 yards, three touchdowns, no picks, you know, makes a couple of nice throwaways. What do you want from the guy? 113 quarterback rating, not great? If he did this all year, he'd be in the Hall of Fame.
You know what Ira looks like? You know what Ira looks like? Ira looks like you look at these old Dean Martin roasts, and Ira's getting roasted here. He's just sitting there taking it. He can't wait to fire back.
All right, Ira. So you know, I just think you're understating Jameis a little bit, and I do have a question for you because I do want your sage wisdom here. One thing we're not used to in Tampa, and you wrote about this, you were on the money again. Swaggy Baker, ding, you were on the money with him. We'll get to him later. But you flat out called DeSean Jackson a diva before the season even started. And you know what? I don't get it. What? Dirk Cutter is backing DeSean Jackson, and he's already complaining the Bucks won. Dirk Cutter sat on your podcast and told us all together these complaint issues don't happen when you're winning. Well, you know what? They're 2-1, and they just won.
I don't know where to start over here, DeKemper. All right, we'll start quickly with DeSean Jackson. One, yeah, he's frustrated, but he's not causing a problem. He's not causing a problem. He's not going crazy on the sidelines. He's not in Jameis Winston's face over, you know, poor little sensitive Mr. Risbitz. A guy shows a little motion on the field. He's crapping his pants over here. He's upset. Now, on to the bigger issue. This is the most simple way to say it, and you have nothing to say about this, Risbitz.
And no retort.
Lead DeKemper. Could have completed that pass to O.J. Howard. Lead DeKemper. That is the easiest way. Now, I'm not knocking Winston for getting it out there. There's nobody within 30 yards. That was a brilliantly designed play and a total breakdown by the Giants. You know, is that a Winston rocket, you know, to O.J. Howard? He's got Mike Evans, an instant mismatch down the field. Who uses his body better than Mike Evans? Very few.
The best feet of any wide receiver
in
the NFL.
Great feet. Isbitz can't score from the half-yard line. I understand that they did the pitch out, but what about after the pitch out? Get the ball in the end zone, gentlemen. I'm not saying Jameis Winston didn't play well. I don't think this game's going in his time capsule. Now you know, he dropped in a nice ball to Brate when it counted.
Mm-hmm.
Brate made a nice catch, as Brate does. So, look, he played a lot better than he did in Minnesota. Zero giveaways for the Bucks. Big factor in the win on a day that the defense didn't get any takeaways. There were no turnovers in this game. But, you know, this is not Winston's ticket to Canton over here, DeKemper. He played well. I'll leave it at that. Isbitz has the guy, you know, he's bronzing off his bust over.
Yeah, I'll admit that, you know, this doesn't match up with when Winston played at Pittsburgh in his first college game where he was, what, like 36 or 38 for like 400 and some yards and five touchdowns? You know, this wasn't that kind of game.
Well, I got to say, you know, we've been very skeptical for a long time at JoeBucksFan.com of Humphreys. Just that he's, just not really someone to celebrate.
Which drives the Bucks brass bananas.
He continues to produce 6 catches in this game. I think he had 6 catches in Minnesota, I believe. Big catch, 38-yard reception. It seems to be the forgotten reception in this game that set up Brate's touchdown.
Was that the missed tackle where he got lit up, but he never wrapped up and got about 10 yards out? Yak?
Yeah, Humphreys was like a pinball guy. He just didn't go down, just kept running. And really stunning, Godwin didn't show up in this game. They essentially,
I did see him on the field, but I didn't see him do anything.
Yeah, they essentially relegated him to number 4 receiver duty. He didn't really play. But one reason for that, Ira, is what I'm going to ask you next. Balance return to the Bucs offense. Jaquizz Rodgers, through 3 games, Ira, I need your sage wisdom here. Through 3 games, he's averaging 4.1 yards a carry. He had one okay game, opening day, okay. Week 2, 5 carries, didn't do much, and they cut off the running game, understandably. Today, he was strong. So where do you see the state of Jaquizz Rodgers as it relates to Dirk Cutter and his mindset to the running game? And obviously, he's Cutter's guy.
Well, Steve, I'll say this. A 35-yard run will certainly help your average in a short 3-game season. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I will say this on Steve's behalf. He's averaging 4.1 carry.
On his behalf.
I believe that's kind of what he averaged for the full season last year. Maybe 4.2 last year.
Speaks on his behalf, and you're sitting 4 feet from him.
So now we're talking about a significant number of carries as a Buccaneer when you include all of last season. And he's averaging over 4 yards a carry. You know, the Minnesota game was not Quiz Rogers' fault that he wasn't effective. The Bucs didn't run the ball. Mm-hmm. Understandable. You're down 28-3. I understand everything Cutter was saying. I think he's right. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should be pummeled for that. You're down 28-3. Game plan out the window, period. Yes. I understand that. It shouldn't happen, but it did. You know, that it was 28-3. Okay. To me, that loss is 70% on the defense who didn't show up in Minnesota against the backup quarterback. Against the backup quarterback.
Terrible game plan.
You know, there's no way around that. Steve, Quiz Rogers, who in a way resurrected the Bucs season single-handedly last year with that performance in Charlotte when he got the ball 10 times, I believe, in the first quarter, maybe on the first series.
I was thinking first series,
set the tone for a physical Bucs team that night, and they were 1-3, like Isbitz mentions, that going into that, nationally televised game, 1-3. And that squared them, it helped them get back to 3-3, and then they went to 3-5, and we know what happened after that. But if the Bucs would have went to 1-4 that night, season would have blown up. Good chance the whole season would have blown
up.
And then we're not talking about a 9-17 with great expectations in 2017. So Quiz Rogers has nothing to apologize for. It begs the question about Doug Martin, and we'll discuss it later. Steven, Quiz Rogers pretty good back. Is he a guy that's going to carry it 20, 25 times on a consistent base? Nobody does that in this league anymore, Lee. It's just not the way it's done. The Adrian Peterson days look like it's over. Maybe Ezekiel Elliott, but he's working behind a great line.
Not to get completely off the rails here, but I just read something this morning. Albert Breer of MMQB was writing a story, and it was about Saquon Barkley with Penn State. And he's talked to a bunch of scouts, and he gets the sense that maybe the NFL, the pendulum is starting to swing a little bit more back to the running back only because of, offensive line play. They can't protect quarterbacks anymore. A little bit, not much. And Barkley, according to these NFL scouts that Breer talked to, is supposed to be better than Ezekiel Elliott.
The whole running back thing's interesting. I actually listened to Terrell Davis on Sirius this past week, and he was talking in depth about the shift back toward running backs. And he was talking about the shift back toward running backs being a more impact in the game, getting drafted earlier. But he was saying that's the easiest transition in the NFL to go from college running back to pro running back. He wasn't discounting the fact that you got to learn protections, but he was just saying that's the easiest transition. But we all saw the flip side of that today or Sunday, that first round pick or that high second round pick, Dalvin Cook, running backs get hurt.
Yeah.
poof, they're gone. And so your high investment also carries a lot of risk because running backs get hurt. Dalvin Cook blew his knee out, and it looks like he's done for the year. So it's interesting there. Ira, I know fans tuned in today, one, because it's in the headline, and they tune in for your sage wisdom. But what the Buccaneers did, and Dirk Koetter did, setting up the game-winning field goal, that requires your 40-something years. I was going to say 70 years, but I give you a break, of covering the NFL football. To have the balls to pull that off today and set up a kicker who's having a terrible day, what do you make of that?
That's what it's all about. Balls, gonads, cojones, whatever you want to call it. You got it exactly right. And I, you saw my 10 takeaways. I got that Sweezy, I was talking to Dotson. I said, man, Koetter showed a lot of guts. And Sweezy overheard what I was saying. Sweezy goes, it ain't guts, Ira. Those were balls. And balls of steel.
Yeah.
Really. Because what's the flip side? If the kick gets blocked or he shanks it, we are up here killing Koetter. We're killing him.
Not only that, but we're wondering who's kicking Thursday night.
That's right. That's a double whammy.
Yes. And Koetter's getting, if that would have happened, this would have been by far Koetter's worst game as NFL head coach. Aside from the fact that Folk would have lost the game, people would also be screaming about that idiotic pitch out on the half-yard line, which I just can't comprehend how anybody would call that unless he saw something that the defense was giving him. But holy cow, this would have been the worst NFL game Koetter, and he throughout the week he'd been roasted.
And Steve, what actually did happen? He made the kick.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it wasn't exactly right down the middle, Mr. DeKemper. It was not. But he made the kick. The Bucs walk off the field in jubilation. Koetter walks off, and he sees me, and he says, never in doubt, and he repeated it at the podium later. And a big smile. What's the effect of all this? Well, I talked to a lot of guys in the locker room, just like you did, Lee. And I kept bringing up Nick Folk.
Mm-hmm.
I kept bringing it up, and I got some good stuff. And I didn't use it, so I'll sprinkle it in later in the week. But to a man, they said, hey, Koetter says he's got confidence in his 53 men in the roster. He just proved it. He proved a lot to the guys in that locker room, not just Nick Folk, that he is a guy of his word. It did take guts to do that, Lee. Nobody would have said boo if Winston started throwing balls from the 13-yard line. Instead, he drew the clock down. He took two kneel downs. Smart not to give Eli Manning the ball. I understand that.
Sure.
And they would have only needed maybe a field goal to beat him. No margin for error, DeKemper. The kick's no good. You lose. You lose. And Koetter was willing to take that chance.
Yeah, I got two items connected to that. The first one would be the quote I got, for me, the money quote. You're the sage. You probably have one-upped me on this quote. I've used it already on JoeBucksFan.com. I used it Sunday night. But the very same topic we're talking about, the faith that he showed in, that Koetter showed in Folk, I talked to Brenton Grimes, and I asked him about that. I said, what'd you think? Here you got Winston, you got Evans, DeSean Jackson, O.J. Howard, Cam Brait, first down inside the 15-yard line, and you're taking the ball out of their hands for a guy who choked all over the field? And Brent Grimes said, not only did that show faith in him, and here's the money quote, that was love. That's Brent Grimes' quote. That showed love.
How am I going to top that?
And since I brought up Brent Grimes, and I told this to Grimes' face, like, look, dude, I'm not blowing smoke up your rear end. I'm not trying to impress Miko, even though I like Miko. MVP of this defense right now at the quarter pole, so to speak, Brent Grimes. What was the difference in the defense last week? Same personnel. They didn't have Lavonnie David. They didn't have Quan Alexander. They didn't have Grimes. That defense was atrocious. The first half, this defense was pretty good. And, oh, by the way, Odell Beckham is on the field, which Grimes was on him. And what was the difference? Brent Grimes. That's MVP. If one guy can change your defense that much, going up against arguably one of the best in the game, there's your MVP of the defense.
Yeah, I got to go MVP with Grimes as well. He was Pro Bowl caliber right off the bench. Just perfect, really. Almost a near perfect game.
First game the Bucs have won with Quan Alexander on the team when he wasn't dressed.
Good point, Sage. Sage nugget right there, folks. You can't buy that anywhere else. All right, now look, I got to take you to task. Folk, that last kick, he just made it. What is that? It was right through the uprights, Ira. You weren't standing under the pole. It was a good kick. Give me a break. Cut the guy some slack. Ballsy move by Koetter. And he put, really, in many ways, the franchise on the line. Is Nick Folk here Tuesday if he misses that kick? No. Is Jason Light hiding from the Glazers. If that kick is missed with his horrible record for kickers and the Bucks, if they lost this game, they would have been in the cellar of the NFC South, the basement. The Saints, who I wagered on and lost, but I told you were a better team. They're 2-2 now going into the bye. Carolina 3-1. The Falcons 3-1. Bucks needed to keep pace. But look, the looming problem with this team, as we strive to get better, so we talk about problems even in the face of a victory. Pass rush. They can spin it however they want with pressures and hurries and, oh, the Mike Glennon was so rattled. Give me a freaking break. One sack through three games is not cutting it, and it's not Gerald McCoy's fault.
Steve, I didn't think Mike Smith was alibiing after the Chicago game, because I thought his point was fairly well taken that they put Glennon under some duress in that game. They had a pick six for a touchdown, Lee. They moved Glennon off his spot. You notice that after the Minnesota game, in Cutter's own press conference, Steve, Cutter said, no pass rush. That's what he said. He didn't talk about hurries or whatever like he did after the Chicago game. He said no pass rush. I certainly don't think he could defend the pass rush again today. You saw my note.
What pass rush?
You saw my note, Steve. They had two quarterback hits, both from interior defensive linemen, Swaggy and Gerald McCoy. That's it. Two.
You can't defend something that doesn't exist.
Yeah. 49 dropbacks by Eli Manning. 49. Zero sacks and two hurries.
Atrocious.
But they escaped. Now, here comes Mr. Brady. The Patriots may not be the Patriots that we're used to, but they score plenty of points.
Yeah, defensively they may not be, but offensively, yes.
They score plenty of points. Didn't Brady throw five touchdowns last week? And he had another good one? That's not the problem in New England. You know, they go ahead of teams, and then they give up the big play like they did to Kansas City in week one at home. And like they did at home with no Greg Olsen on the Panthers. You can't give up 33 points to that offense. That was a pedestrian offense until today, Carolina. They weren't scoring any points. Cam Newton wasn't doing anything. So, look, Brady's a master. And Mike Smith's going to have to go back and try to come up with some kind of defensive game plan. I don't care if Grimes is out there or not. He's one guy, and they got a lot of weapons.
All right, go back to the talent and the pass rush. Mike Evans can't make lemonade with a bunch of apples and some chicken soup.
You mean Mike Smith.
Mike Smith. So what the hell's going on here? What do they do going forward? They got nobody rushing the passer.
We said Noah Spence was the key figure, Lee. We said it was Noah Spence.
And he's hurt.
Well, where's Noah Spence been?
He's hurt.
Where is he?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to rip a guy for being hurt, but you got to ask yourself. If we know this, certainly the brain trust of the Bucks know this. Why did they sit on their hands and like, well, let's hope Jack Smith comes back and let's hope Noah Spence's shoulder's healthy? It's a lot of hope. Why that was not addressed, I cannot answer that. You know, I was under the impression Bucks would have lost the Giants game. This team was on the verge of spiraling. And if that happened, then questions had to be asked. Why was not running back addressed in the offseason when everybody knew and their brother knew that Doug Martin was iffy? And if he wasn't, why weren't the Bucks ever saying, oh, he's back? It was iffy. Outside of playbook McSnoop Dogg, it was not addressed. Defensive end, edge rush, same thing. They were hoping Jack Smith suddenly found the fountain of health, and which was a reach, and also hoping that Spence's shoulder was okay. Well, apparently it's not. I don't think I'm being out of line in asking those questions. Why? Now, of course, the Bucks would say, well, you can only address so much. Well, these are the two most glaring needs, and everybody and their brother knew it. So, you know, why did you ignore it or hope and pray that everything would turn out okay? Having said that, the Bucks beat the Giants. Winning is the greatest deodorant of all. So far, so good. But sooner, would you say earlier, Ira? 147 dropbacks by 127? One sack. That's beyond atrocious. And there's something, while I'm on this rant, I'll finish real now. This is an organizational issue. This has gone on for three general managers. This has gone on for five coaches. Just like baseball teams, they can't develop hitters. The Rays, for example. Just like some teams, they can't develop bullpen. Like the old Atlanta Braves couldn't develop a relief pitcher. Had the sticks, had the starters, couldn't develop relief pitcher. The Bucks are an organization that either cannot find, cannot identify, cannot develop, cannot coach up an edge rush. And when they had one, They couldn't put two and two together and figure out, you know, this guy might be a Pro Bowler, Michael Bennett, and they let him walk away. For whatever reason, this is an organizational thing. This goes down to the Bird Dog Scouts going to the McHenry College games in Southern Illinois against Molly Butthurt High School or whatever.
Somewhere Simeon Rice is wondering, where's the next double-digit sacker, gentlemen?
All right, Sage, let me say this. Will Clark... You know who Will Clark is?
Uh-oh. Yeah, he's an outstanding first baseman for the San Francisco Giants from the mid-'80s to the mid-'90s.
Yes, your boy Mad Dog was obsessed. Him or Mattingly, who was better? But Will Clark, the Bucs were pass rushing off the edge. Will Clark, he was bouncing between the right edge and the left edge. Noah Spence bouncing back and forth. And rushing inside a lot was Robert Ayers. And Swaggy, Chris Baker so far... Nothing. Now it's early. It's too early to bury him. But this is a problem. Will Golston can't rush the passer. Jaquie Smith, you know what he did most of this game? Almost half the game, the guy was riding the stationary bicycle on the side of the field. He's got to be able to give more than Will Clark. Who's Will Clark? I don't even know who Will Clark is. It's a problem, Ira. And at this point, there's no fix. But before we get to Doug Martin, which we're going to get to, when you look at the success of Gerald McCoy, who went out there today and owned the first series. Third series, he owned that too. Owned two of the first three series, which prompted Booger McFarland to go out on Twitter and say, Gerald McCoy is absolutely dominant, but he's got no help around him in the grand scheme. How is this affecting him? What kind of player is McCoy, you think, if he's on a good team? And how might this affect him down the road? We're talking Hall of Fame, Pro Bowls, all that stuff.
Well, look. You're never going to put him in the class of Warren Sapp, and I'll tell you why. Because Simeon Rice didn't come around until, I think it was 2001. And by 2001, Sapp was a dominant player in this league. Well established as a Pro Bowler, perennial, if not the best defensive tackle in the league, on the short list. And he probably had 60 or 70 sacks by that time. And then Simeon helped put that defense over the top and helped, you know. But Marcus Jones had 14 sacks one year playing with Warren Sapp.
And they gave him the franchise tag.
All you need to know about Warren Sapp. So Sapp didn't have great talent around him until Simeon showed up.
Yeah, 1999, it was Steve White that was right. Steve White. The right defensive end.
You know, Greg Spires, nice player.
Yeah, nice player.
Nice player. But, Steve, you're right. I mean, maybe we got to look at McCoy in a little bit different light because – every time they surround them with players, new players, a different lineup, they're still not getting anything off the edge like Lee, you know, suggests. And McCoy's making plays.
He's a monster today.
And he's really, he's rarely single-teamed. A lot of double coverage. And speaking of Baker, and I don't want to jump on this guy, you know, and it's early in the season. But Lee, he's not on the field that much. He's not on the field. I was watching at the end. Steve, the Giants' last drive, they scored that touchdown. Baker wasn't in there. They put him in third and short, and I think that was the play that the Giants scored when Eli threw the touchdown.
Late in the game?
He wasn't in on first and second down near the goal line. Yeah. Steve, he wasn't in the game.
What was real interesting about that, and I had my binoculars on Swaggy because I was wanting to make sure if that was Swaggy in there, and I wanted to see if it was number 90. They put him in. I couldn't tell because, you know, when you were looking at binoculars, your field of vision is narrowed. It's almost like looking in a telescope. Obviously, he's at defensive tackle, and he stood up, and he's got his arms up in the air, like, where the hell do I go? Where the hell do I go? Now, to be fair, I don't know that, but I'm speculating that's what it looked like. You could tell his arms were up in the air. He was confused about something. He's the one that called the timeout. Looked like they had a lineman short. That's what it looked like.
I believe they had 10 men on the field. I believe you're right.
That might have been it, because he has arms straight up in the air, and he's looking around like, where do I go? Where do I go? What's going on here? And he's the one that called the timeout. And then the next play, I noticed they had an extra lineman on there. So, like I said, winning is the best deodorant.
The pass rush, Steve, if the pass rush doesn't pick up in the final 13 weeks, this team's probably not going anywhere. I mean, let's be blunt about it.
Well, why should we expect it? We got the same guys out there they've had last year and 2 years ago, you argue. Unless Noah Spence's shoulder miraculously gets better, it's the same people. It's the same schlubs trying to... Will Golston's not going to rush a quarterback. I mean, Jock Smith, come on. He hasn't been on the field for over a year now. I don't get why people are expecting something different when it's the same cast of characters.
I think part of it comes back to coaching, right? They hired Jay Hayes, supposed to be a guru with the Bengals, did a phenomenal job there for years with a lot of players flowing through over 13 seasons. So maybe he can coach some of these guys up. I'm not even sure Noah Spence is really hurt. Dirk Cutter said on his radio show, Buccaneers Radio Network on Friday, said that they popped the shoulder back in and the tests showed that he didn't lose any strength. So they was I basically had an awesome week of practice and had 100% strength. So we'll see. I mean, it's just one game.
Allegedly, we didn't see any of this, of course.
No, we didn't see it on the field. But
well, the practice field, he's saying he did X, Y, and Z in practice. Well, we didn't see that.
Sure.
You know, for all we know, he would have had 20 sacks and 25 plays. And we didn't see it, so we don't know.
And the one time we did notice Robert Ayers, it was a big play, was a run stuff. It wasn't a pass rush. It was a run stuff.
Yeah, and he did okay, you know, but I mean, it's just not enough. And of course, the Giants' offensive line is known as one of the worst in the league, so it's something to watch.
That is, yeah, you factor that in, it's nasty.
Something to watch going forward. You have to be happy, though, about the linebackers, which, like you said earlier, Iron, no Kwan, no Levante, and it didn't really look like it was a problem. So that's unbelievable depth right there
to pull that off.
A
perfect example how putrid and non-existent the pass rush is. Eli Manning, of all people, he will never make people forget Michael Vick. Eli Manning is sitting back there. He's got time. He's got more time, which says a lot about the pass coverage. Excellent pass coverage. Eli Manning takes off and runs for a touchdown. The guy could have gone to Publix and ordered a sandwich and came back, and he would still have been in the pocket. Concrete shoes, Eli Manning ran for a touchdown.
All right, Ira, Buccaneers, we learned Monday, Doug Martin. Back on this roster, they owe him $5 million in change. He's being paid like a top dog running back. We've had a lot of strong opinions on Martin and his situation and how he played last year, which wasn't very good. And here he is back on this team. So what do you think? What do you think his role is? And do you like this move? What's your take?
Lee, the great mystery has been solved. This is on a par with Stonehenge. People have been debating Doug Martin. Yeah, you know, since he got suspended, the Bucks are going to bring him back or whatever. Lee paid his penance, and I'll say this, and I think we'd all agree, even Isbits would have trouble disagreeing with me on this.
Oh, that's a stretch.
Even Isbits. The past has shown us that when Doug Martin is motivated, he produces.
Yeah, and that's a real pet peeve for me.
Let me finish. And he's motivated because he wants to continue his career past 2017. If he doesn't produce, he's gone as a Buck at the end of the season, without any question. And he'll have no great value on the free agent market. He'll just be one of those running backs that's out there. If he has, another bad year to go along with, you know, as you said, what is it, 3 out of 5? He's done nothing.
3 out of 5 is terrible.
So this will be 4 out of 6. You know, there's not going to be a great market. Look, he's got fresh legs, Steve. I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to contribute to the New England game. I don't know what kind of shape he's in.
Exactly.
You know, but going forward, fresh legs, add some wheels to a crowded backfield. I know what Isbits is going to say. He's going to say Cutter said last year that there was no continuity in the running backs and it screwed up the running back situation. And now here comes Doug Martin.
Well, he said it at the combine.
So, look, when motivated, he's a good football player. And when he's a good football player, he's a great football player. So that's all I'm saying.
That opens up Pandora's box with me. First off, the motivation issue. What is his salary? I'm asking rhetorically. What is his salary? That's not motivation enough. Are you a good teammate? Is that not motivation enough? Do you not want to win? Is that not motivation enough? That to me is red flag central when you got to hope that a guy is motivated. What the hell? I mean, come on. Is Jameis motivated? I mean, you often remarked Jameis would probably play football for $10. You know, I mean, I just that just drives me bananas if he's motivated. Number one. Number two, his 2 good years, how do we know he was motivated or not? How do we know? When his bad years, how do we know if he was? Maybe he was motivated. They just sucked. I mean, that's the issue, motivated. To me, I'd say there's the exit sign. There's your motivation. That's just a personal pet peeve of mine on a professional level to wonder if a guy who's being paid multi-millions of dollars a season. You wonder if he's motivated or not. I got a lot of issues with that.
Yeah, I'll say this. All right, I never really understood the whole motivation issue or the whole motivation concept because I'll throw this out there. 2014, brand new head coach, brand new quarterback, brand new offensive coordinator. Here's Doug Martin. He's coming off a bad 2013 season, and then he got hurt 6 games in. So bad start, got hurt. Wasn't he motivated? I mean, new coach, new coordinator coming off an injury. And so I don't get that part.
I understand. You know what? Oh, yeah, it wasn't a contract season in 2014. I understand Lovie Smith was a new coach. But contract. You know, it looks like he's a guy that's motivated by trying to make the next big contract. And we'll see what happens. But to think that he's going to be a buck past this season, I'm a little skeptical of that.
Okay, so let me go back to your sage wisdom just on two points, Ira. One, does it surprise you that the Bucks are paying him full salary and didn't renegotiate a contract because they seemingly had plenty of leverage here? So does that surprise you? And two, if you don't think he's back here next year, obviously, we know that if he runs for 1,000 yards in the next 12 weeks, he'll be back. But if you don't think he's coming back next year, then what is he doing here? Because that's not helping develop Peyton Barber or helping this team get into a championship rhythm when you're running a guy that isn't going to be here next year.
I would say, Lee, that the guy that's going to be the workhorse running back for the 2018 Bucks is not on the roster. So that addresses Isbit's point about what's he doing here because he's taking, you know, carries away from Peyton Barber. Based on the last 2 weeks, Barber's already a forgotten man. Lee, I'm not quite sure what's going on with Barber.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was, this past week, leading up to the Giants game, I was probably more so than anyone, certainly more so than anyone in the media that I'm aware of, was, where's Barber? Let's, you know, because Barber, the first couple games, the few carries he got, he did well. And I'm like, well, you know, let's get this guy in the field. He was nondescript against the Giants. He had a couple runs. It was nothing.
And he did nothing. He didn't get a chance against Minnesota. He didn't get
a
chance.
He had a couple runs. Well, wait a minute. You're right. Not against Minnesota. You're right. Yeah, you can tell fans are starting to go this way about DeSean Jackson. He's griping. He's not getting the balls. People are going to throw Diva out. You know what? To me, if you're a kind of player like, I'm not going to bust my tail unless you pay me, that's a freaking diva. Not DeSean Jackson, Doug Martin. And I have to always say this because people always bring it up. Doug Martin and I professionally, and I guess personally, but I never see the guy outside the locker room, we get along fine. I like Doug Martin. I have nothing against Doug Martin as a person. It comes down to production. That's all there is to it. I don't care who a guy is. We're not talking high school Harry here. We're not talking about college Sam, sophomore Sam in college at East Cornfield State University. Talk about the NFL. It's all about production. 3 out of 5 years he has not produced. That is my issue. Your neighbor, I bet you got a nice neighbor. You sure as hell wouldn't pay him seven figures to be a running back for the Bucks.
No, I don't like the guy next door. Steve, as far as the contract situation, I am a little surprised because, Lee, the Bucks had leverage.
Yeah.
And I don't want, if they would have used the leverage, Steve, I don't think they deserved any criticism from people saying you're being mean to Doug Martin because, guys.
He set himself up.
Guys, Doug Martin let his team down.
Yes.
Doug Martin let his team down. So in the aftermath of that, the Bucks don't deserve any criticism for being careful with their money with a guy who let the team down.
All right, Ira, it was great to see you here doing your sage thing. And we thank Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Your podcast can be found at iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, JoeBucksFan.com every Tuesday and Thursday. Ira, you got any parting words, parting shots?
Buck fans should take some solace at this, Lee. And it's the oldest cliche in the NFL. Every win's a good win. And this was a heck of a win in a way. Because, as you said, leaving points on the board, not taking advantage at the half-yard line. The kicker had a terrible day. But Dirk Koetter showed something today. He showed faith. Have a little faith. And he had a lot of faith in Nick Folk. Hopefully this helps Nick Folk and his confidence going forward. If it doesn't, the kicking woes and the lack of a pass rush are going to be enough to probably sink this team. I hope that's not the case.
Can I ask Ira a story here? You know, I always got to end it with Ira's story. Okay, Ira, we're both of a certain age. We knew this guy. He was a cult hero in so many words. Monty Hall died. You know, let's see what's behind door number 3.
Absolutely. And they always picked the wrong door, Lee. Always. It was terrible.
You know how in The Price is Right, they always had the Playboy models? Wasn't there a hostess or whatever you call those women by the name of Carol that was like the it girl for a while there in the 60s?
Oh, boy, you know, the Kempers bringing back some memories over there, Steve, from the 60s, the 70s. Yeah. You know.
Am I right that Carol wasn't her name?
I'm going to throw this out at
you. Uh-oh.
You led me into a beauty right here. Now, Izbitz loves to argue. I don't even think he can argue this one.
I haven't seen him write any notes today. So.
I'll say this, guys. And I don't want to speak for all three of us. But, you know, with the no holds barred social scene, the sexual revolution.
Okay,
the
60s, yeah.
There's not much,
Hefner?
There's not much left to the imagination.
Oh, speaking of icons, Hefner.
These days, yeah. And by the way, he should have got more publicity on the news shows.
You think so?
Because whether you agreed with him or not, or you thought he was, you know, a pig, mm-hmm. or whatever, he was a big figure. He was a major, major figure. And I'm watching some of the news shows the other day. The guy's, you know, 6:30 news, and the guy's on like at 6:58, and they got a 1 minute homage to him. Whether you like him or not, he's a major figure. Anyway, back to my old point, Steve. No holds barred. You see everything. Nothing's left in imagination. And the more I think about it, guys, I'm just speaking from a guy perspective.
Oh,
the women of the 60s. I'll stack them up against anybody that's out there.
I know where he's going with
you
this.
You start with Raquel Welch. You can't go wrong. Izbitz, you better grab this.
What now, James Bond?
Right, get out of here, Ira.
I got to add one.
Women of the 60s.
I got to add. He's gone to something here. Oh, Mike Leach. Okay, this weekend. You're going 60s and sexual revolution. You know where I'm going with this. Mike Leach, Steve. I know you're not a college football guy. Mike Leach coaches Washington State. They're undefeated. Had a big upset on USC. So they're in the driver's seat to win the Pac-12, it looks like. Mike Leach is like kind of like a Bobby Knight of football. He's always got a one-liner. He's not nasty like Knight is, but he's always got a one-liner like Knight does. And so he was doing a post-game interview after the game. You know, the fans are all on the field. They're going crazy. And a guy at ESPN asked him, from the studios in Bristol, asked him something, what about the atmosphere? And he goes, oh, this looks like a lot like Woodstock, only everybody has their clothes on.
Not bad for Mike Leach. What do you got for me, Steven?
I got nothing. You're done, Ira. We'll see you.